This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our headlines this hour. Fighting intensifies around Ukraine's Mariupol as Russia sets a deadline for Ukrainian troops in the besieged city to surrender. North Korea test fires a new type of tactical guided weapon system to enhance its nuclear capabilities. And more countries around the world condemn Israel's latest raid on the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Al-Quds. Welcome. We are coming to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. On day 53 of the Russia-Ukraine war, Russian forces strike major Ukrainian cities, including the capital, Kyiv. Moscow says it has attacked Kyiv's tank repair factory. The cities of Lviv, Mykolaiv, and Kharkiv have also been targeted over the past 24 hours. Ukrainian air defenses say they have shot down several Russian cruise missiles near the Polish border. In Mariupol, the tensions seem to be continuing unabated. Moscow says the majority of the city's urban areas are now cleared of Ukrainian forces, and Russian troops are pressing ahead with their advances there. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has once again warned about the worsening humanitarian crisis in Mariupol, saying many Ukrainian soldiers and injured people have been blocked in that area. He says the elimination of Ukrainian forces in the crisis-hit city would put an end to talks with Moscow. North Korea has test-fired a new weapon system aimed at boosting its nuclear capabilities. North Korea's official news agency, KCNA, has confirmed the test, saying it was carried out under the supervision of leader Kim Jong-un. It called the weapon significant in increasing the efficiency of Pyongyang's tactical nukes. The reported launch comes a few weeks after controversies in the Korean Peninsula over Pyongyang's testing of intercontinental ballistic missiles. With that launch, North Korea ended a self-imposed moratorium on testing such missiles after 5 years. South Korea says these moves escalate tensions and worsen ties between the two neighbors. But Pyongyang says its tests are in response to mounting tensions on the Korean Peninsula, triggered by joint military exercises between Seoul and Washington. International reactions pouring in over Israel's violations, including its assault on Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Al-Quds. Iran has strongly condemned the aggression, calling for unity among Muslims to defend the Palestinian cause.
Deeply outraged by the new atrocities of the Israeli regime, we strongly condemn the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is a reminder that normalization with the apartheid regime of Israel only encourages the oppressor to double down on its brutality. Muslims must stand united behind the Palestinian cause.
Palestinians say the aggression amounts to declaration of war, urging international intervention to prevent the situation from spiraling out of control. Morocco, Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia have strongly condemned the raid, saying Tel Aviv must be held to account. Lebanon's parliament speaker has hailed Palestinians' resistance. Nabi Hiberi says the occupation of Palestine will soon come to an end. Lebanon's Hezbollah has also strongly denounced the storming of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the quote barbaric attack against worshippers. It says the invasion was a serious violation of the sanctity of the holy site. Jordanians also hit the streets of the capital Amman in solidarity with Palestinians. The protesters gathered near the Israeli embassy waving Palestinian flags. Yemen's Ansarullah movement has also denounced the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and hailed Palestinians' steadfastness. Meanwhile, the UN chief has voiced grave concerns over the situation in Al-Quds and urged Israeli and Palestinian leaders to avoid further escalation. The European Union has called for an immediate end to violence in Al-Quds. Germany, France, Italy, and Spain have issued a joint statement expressing concern but falling short of condemning Israel's assault. Russia, however, has slammed Israeli actions and criticized the regime for turning the Gaza Strip into, quote, a prison under open sky. Moscow has also blasted what it called the illegal occupation and creeping annexation of the Palestinian territories. And Israel's main backer, the U.S., says it's deeply concerned about the latest escalation and urges all sides to exercise restraint. We are receiving breaking news that this time Israeli settlers have stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound under the protection of security forces. This after clashes between Palestinians and the security forces a few days ago, which resulted in several cases of injured Palestinians. And as I just said, reactions are pouring in. Almost every country across the globe is condemning the attacks on the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the desecration of this holy site, especially during the fasting month of Ramadan. We will keep a close eye on that developing story, and we will keep you informed as soon as we get more information. Activist and political commentator Paul Larity says the United States' call for restraint on both sides will only embolden Israel to commit more crimes.
Well, the reaction of the United States is predictable, asking for restraint on the part of both the Israelis and the Palestinians. Frankly, I think the time has ended for restraint, at least on the part of the Palestinians and of the allies with Palestinians, and Palestinians in Palestine, Palestinians outside of Palestine, and all those who care about the future of Palestine, because restraint means means empowering the Zionist settlers and occupiers to achieve their end of expelling all the Palestinians and taking all the land for themselves. So, resistance is not necessarily the use of restraint. And if the lack of restraint means more resistance, then maybe it's not such a bad thing. This is the problem. What they have to see is that they cannot continue to get away with confiscating Palestinian land and subjugating Palestinians.
Israel's Friday attack on Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds has sparked a wave of angry reactions on social media. People have slammed the international communities in action to stop Israel's crimes against Palestinians. Hashtag Trending brings you some of those reactions.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here, back with another Hashtag Trending. So tensions have been running high in the occupied Palestinian territory since the beginning of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. And Friday saw an escalation in one of the holiest sites for Muslims all around the world. Just at dawn on Friday, Israeli forces raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and fired rubber bullets and sound bombs at the worshippers there. And as a result of the Israeli aggression, some 150 Palestinians were wounded and hundreds were arrested. The Israeli act of aggression sparked a wave of outrage on social media, with many users pointing out the fact that this is not even the first time that the Israelis attacked the holy site during the month of Ramadan. They also said that Muslims around the world must unite and stand against Israeli apartheid. The first tweet of the day comes from Code Pink. They said, "Every year during Ramadan, the Israeli occupation forces attack Al-Aqsa, one of the holiest sites in Islam. Palestinians defend themselves. Zionists use it to justify Israel's violence. This is the violence U.S. taxpayers fund. Do not look away." Nuha has our next tweet. "Israel has been attacking and killing Palestinians again during the holy month of Ramadan and again attacking the most holy mosque, Al-Aqsa. This apartheid has been for 74 years and is still ongoing. They especially attack during this holy time at places of worship, pure evil." Our next tweet comes from Turgay Evren. He said, "No difference this year. The fate of Masjid Al-Aqsa is the same this Ramadan as well. While we Muslims are busy fighting each other, Israel keeps attacking the worshippers in the first Qibla of Islam. What will bring us to our senses? I don't know." Numerous comments were also posted on social media blaming the West and mainstream media for keeping silent regarding the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. People say that if such an event were to occur at a church or at a temple, it would make headlines everywhere on every major news outlet. Moving on to our next batch of comments, Abiha Zahra said, "I am sorry this is not Ukraine, so the world will remain silent. This is Palestine, where people get tortured by Israelis every day. Where is humanity? Where are human rights champions?" Humanity in Danger has our next tweet. They said, "The Israeli forces attack worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque, injuring 158, arresting more than 400 Palestinians. Imagine if the same thing was done by Muslims in any church or temple. It would be in headlines on every news channel, but who cares, because victims are Muslims, not Europeans." That is the very definition of double standards for you right there. Ismail Patel has our next tweet. "If this was happening to other people's place of worship by an occupying force, it would be all over the news. Are Muslim values worthless? This is more than about Palestinians." That is definitely the case. Some say that the Israeli attack on defenseless Palestinian worshippers and the desecration of their holy site during their holy month, mind you, amounts to an act of terrorism, and the international media has a responsibility to properly cover it and to condemn the attack as such as an act of terror. Moving on to our final batch of comments, Farida Fadil said, "Attacking civilians during their prayers and rituals and defiling their holy places is an act of terror, and whoever does it is a terrorist." Dr. Salman Butt has our next tweet. 50,000 attended Friday prayers in defiance of the annual trend of settlers of the last remaining European colony in the Middle East violently attacking defenseless worshippers in the holy month of Ramadan. Final comments comes from Rebelet. She says, "Israeli terrorists attacking Palestinians in Al-Aqsa Mosque, the holiest site in Palestine for Islamic prayer. No media coverage nor no international media has condemned this attack. If other holy sites were desecrated and invaded like this, we would be seeing world coverage." And that brings us to the end of this edition of Hashtag Trending. Let's head back to the studio for the rest of the world news.
Moving on, police in Sweden are preparing for new violent clashes following riots that erupted between far-right demonstrators and counter-protesters. During the riots, 12 security officers were injured. The police department says it will not revoke the permit for a planned demonstration by the Danish right-wing Stram Kurs Party in the city of Örebro. However, it has beefed up security in anticipation of more violence. On Thursday, the Heartline Party held a rally in a heavily Muslim-populated area in Sweden. At the demonstration, party leader Rasmus Paludan burned a copy of the Holy Quran, ignoring objections from onlookers. Counter-protests broke out with demonstrators setting fire to security vehicles after police ignored their calls to stop the far-right rally. The Stram Kurs Party is known for its anti-immigrant and anti-Islam political views. The French presidential election has roared back to relevance as voters are upset over the inflation crisis. Many are upset with the austerity policies of President Emmanuel Macron, though others are also skeptical of his contender, Marine Le Pen's promises. Rami Mazari has more from Paris.
The French presidential election was trending as an easy victory for the incumbent, Emmanuel Macron, until the unrest in Ukraine began. Macron's insistence on long-term sanctions for Russia exploded already high inflation. That's resulted in widespread hardship, resentment, and tough assessments of Macron's economic record.
It's clear that Macron has not improved the quality of life for the French. He's not responsible for all the problems he's had to deal with, but it's clear there's a big difference between what he's promised and what he's delivered.
The French election may come down to this. Who do voters feel will protect the average person from the economically explosive effect of long-term sanctions on Russia over the unrest in the Ukraine? It's not a question the mainstream media wants to discuss, but it is top of mind for the average person.
Polls show the race is now a dead heat, with a soaring Marine Le Pen of the National Rally taking an opposite tack, promising to oppose Russia energy sanctions, which are wreaking havoc with gas, heating, and food prices. As the challenger, Le Pen doesn't have a record to defend, and she's escaping anger over the economic crisis.
Macron has absolutely not done a good job on protecting our purchasing power. The middle class feels that Macron has contempt for the middle class, and they also feel a great contempt for the neoliberal globalist banker Macron.
Macron's far-right economic policies provoked the unprecedented yellow vest protests in 2018. He only made minor concessions before turning to brutal repression. And the coronavirus crisis only aggravated economic inequalities.
Macron needed to go much further in his efforts to reduce prices. It's unbearable to go to the supermarket these days. Even people who make an honest salary say that they are having trouble.
Abstention may reach record highs because many voters wonder if Le Pen would actually deliver on her populist economic promises. Her party has historically been aligned with neoliberalism as well. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
Public outrage continues to swell in the U.S. city of Grand Rapids over the fatal shooting of an unarmed black man by a white police officer, with demonstrators turning out for a fifth consecutive day. The protests remain peaceful, with the demonstrators chanting slogans and waving signs. They've been calling for justice for Patrick Lioya. The 26-year-old Congolese refugee was killed during a routine traffic stop earlier this month during a scuffle with an officer over a taser in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The officer has not been charged. The victim's family is demanding that the authorities dismiss the officer and file criminal charges against him. The Democratic Republic of the Congo has also condemned the assassination of its citizen, calling it a cowardly act. Lioya is the latest in a growing list of racial minorities killed at the hands of police. One such high-profile case involved the killing of George Floyd, which ignited widespread protests against racism in the U.S. and across the globe.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, Salam and welcome to the program. The 15th of the blessed month of Ramadan is the birth anniversary of the Prophet's first grandchild, Imam Hassan Mojtaba, peace upon him. Congratulations to all our listeners on this auspicious day. God says in Ayah 134 of Surah Al-Imran that the God-weary are those who spend in ease and adversity. and suppress their anger and excuse the faults of the people, and Allah loves the virtuous. God-fearingness is closely related to controlling anger, so that Prophet Muhammad says that the closest person to prophethood is the one who is patient. Quenching anger is so important that Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "If you're not patient, pretend to be patient, because rarely a man likens himself to a group unless he soon becomes one of them." There are several ways to control anger. The Prophet says, if you are angry, perform ritual ablution, since anger is from Satan and Satan is from fire and fire goes out with fire. He has also said that if a person restrains his anger, God will distance his punishment from him. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, patience means that the person tolerates the disaster which occurs to him and overlooks what angers him. We have heard many stories on the mercy of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny towards Jews and idolaters. But this is the most famous one. There was a Jew who used to pour ash on the Prophet's head. The messenger of mercy would face this repulsive behavior, but he never got angry. One day, he was passing in the same route, but there was no ash poured on his head. The Prophet inquired the reason, and he was said that the Jewish man was sick. The great Prophet went to visit the Jewish man. This divine conduct made the Jewish man so ashamed that he instantly professed Islam and became Muslim. This was the messenger of mercy who would overlook violation of his personal rights, yet he would get very angry at violation of social rights and divine laws. He would not fear anyone in the way of implementing justice. Everyone was equal in his eyes, and his only criterion was justice and right. He would say that the previous peoples fell due to discrimination and failure to implement justice. In view of this, anger is a sacred and good thing if it is employed with wisdom and prudence. Such anger will lead to decisiveness in dealing with social affairs. This kind of anger will never trespass divine limits. As we said earlier, the 15th of Ramadan coincides with the birth anniversary of the first son of Imam Ali and Lady Fatima Zahra, and the first grandchild of Prophet Muhammad, blessings and greetings of God upon them. He was none but Imam Hasan Mujtaba, peace upon him. He was very careful about worships and prayers in the month of Ramadan. He has been narrated as saying, "There is an accepted prayer for every fasting person, so say before the first morsel of iftar, 'In the name of God, O you whose forgiveness is broad, forgive me.'" Imam Hasan Mujtaba also narrates a hadith from the Prophet that he said, "Helping a faithful brother is better than fasting and keeping night vigil." The second infallible successor of the Prophet also says, "Indeed, Allah has made the month of Ramadan a field of contest for His creatures. So a group goes ahead in it through obedience and worship towards salvation and God's satisfaction, while another group loses due to heedlessness." Well, now let's continue with some points on fasting. Wetting the lips does not nullify fasting. Swallowing the saliva does not nullify fasting either. A fasting person is permitted to taste food, but he or she should take care not to eat anything. A fasting person can rotate water in his mouth to quench thirst, provided that not a single drop goes down the throat. If the person eats something out of negligence, his or her fasting is correct. Anointing the lips to prevent drawing and cracking is permitted, but it shouldn't be mixed with saliva to be swallowed. Fragrant shampoos and creams are allowed to consume in Ramadan. Perfumes too do not nullify fasting, but one should avoid smelling fragrant flowers. Using drops for eyes are permitted in Ramadan as they are not nourishing. Sometimes we have stomach reflux. This does not nullify fasting if we do not swallow the food in the mouth deliberately. One day, Prophet David asked God of the reward of a person who fasts one day for God's sake. God answered, "Fasting is for me, and I reward the fasting person. He has two times of happiness. One is at the moment of iftar, the breaking fasting, and the other one when he meets me and I give him the reward. I give 10 things. I forgive his sins. I give him a lot of reward. I bring him close to my mercy. I admit him into paradise from the gate which is special for the fasting. He won't be thirsty on the day of judgment. He will be plunged in my mercy. I will clothe the fasting person with the costume of the God-weary. I will write his name among the truthful. I will answer his prayer, and I will grant him wisdom."
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Whenever people talk about the war in Ukraine, they tend to focus on what's happening inside Ukraine. You know, the battles taking place in Mariupol, the Donbass, or the outskirts of Kiev. But that's just half the story. The war in Ukraine is really a catalyst. It's pushing the world towards a multipolar order. Now, right this moment, we are seeing a global realignment. And I don't just mean the shifting of alliances. We're talking about the future of energy sales, global supply chains, the redistribution of power from the concentrated hands of a few in the West towards Asia. This is a seismic shift, both in size and nature, that could very well determine the future of international politics for the next decade. Now, if I told you 2 months ago that EU member states would be paying for their gas in rubles, you would never have believed me. And yet here we are, where the dominance of the US dollar, of the euro, are being challenged. And while the Western press want you to believe that the whole world is united and has the exact same position on Russia, it couldn't be further from the truth. So maybe it really is time to take a hard look at what the so-called international community really means and where it's headed. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. The United States of America has been the global superpower during the 21st century up until this point, and for the better part of the last century. And one of the things that the US derives much of its power from is its currency, the US dollar. So toward the end of World War II in 1944, you had the Bretton Woods system that was put in place, pegging the US dollar to the gold standard. And as a result, the US dollar de facto became the global reserve currency. And that lasted for a few decades, right? And then from 1968 to 1973, that system fell apart. And what emerged soon thereafter in its place was the petrodollar. The United States, in secret, made an agreement with Saudi Arabia, right? They told the Saudis, we'll give you weapons, we'll give you security. And in exchange, the Saudis would conduct all oil sales in US dollars and buy up US bonds. 80% of all oil transactions are conducted in US dollars. Around 55% of global reserves are in US dollars. But now, because of the war in Ukraine, that could very well change. We've had several shocking developments in the last week that you would have never imagined before, right? So because of the war in Ukraine, the US, the EU, they have slapped Russia with sanctions to the point that Russia is now the most sanctioned country on earth with well over 5,530 sanctions. The EU sanctioned everything except Russian energy imports because the EU relies on Russia, right? About 40% of their gas comes from Russia. However, the UK, the US, they went ahead and straight up banned Russian energy imports. And even though the US isn't a major importer of Russian oil, that announcement of, oh, we're thinking about banning Russian oil and then actually banning Russian oil, this caused gas prices and oil prices to skyrocket. Oil went up to around $135 a barrel. That's the highest we've seen since July 2008. Gas prices also went up dramatically, Dutch and British. And now all of a sudden, the US is panicking because the US is a net importer of oil. So their oil bill is going way up. And so in order to drive the price back down, the Americans are trying several things, right? First of all, they called up the Saudis and the Emiratis and asked them, please produce more oil. We need to calm global prices. But turns out Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudi crown prince, he won't even take Joe Biden's phone call. You know, apparently they're unhappy because the United States isn't giving them enough support to kill more Yemenis. Then the United States sent a delegation to Venezuela. Remember, Venezuela sits on the world's largest reserves of oil. And the US used to be one of their top customers, you know, until Bush, Obama, Trump sanctioned them into oblivion. And what's funny here is that for years we've been hearing from the US and their allies that Nicolas Maduro is not the president of Venezuela. Apparently, the president is some guy that no one's ever heard of in Venezuela called Juan Guaido. But now, all of a sudden, when the Americans need oil, oh, now they recognize who's the real president and they're sending a delegation to beg for oil. And again, who are they talking to? Who's the decision maker? Well, I can tell you it's not Juan Guaido because they went to speak to none other than Maduro. Now, if the Americans are begging Venezuela for oil and begging Maduro for oil, you know the situation is dire. And on top of that, the Americans have tried other ways to bring down oil prices, right? So all of a sudden, after dragging their feet for well over a year, all of a sudden the US wants to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal. Wow. So remember, the idea is that they lift sanctions on Iran. Iran can put its oil back on the global market, and then oil prices go down because the supply is increased. Well, that didn't happen because of multiple reasons. Russia demanded a written guarantee that Iran won't be hit with fresh sanctions for maintaining ties with Russia. However, it's also been reported there are additional details that had to be ironed out, the terrorism designations and so on. The point is, this sudden enthusiasm and this rush from the Americans to finish up the deal, it really shows their desperation. And the United States have basically sanctioned so many people, they've sanctioned everyone, that they've backed themselves into a corner. And who has the upper hand now? Russia, Iran, Venezuela. Let me tell you, that is quite the twist, right? You're really seeing the tables turn right before you. And to make matters worse for Washington, Saudi Arabia not only refused to take their calls, but was even contemplating selling oil to China, not in US dollars, but in yuan, in China's currency, the renminbi. So basically saying, bye-bye, petrodollar. Remember, the entire premise behind the greenback's value is that major oil sales, energy sales, are denominated in US dollars. Now, China imported roughly 17% of its oil from Saudi Arabia in 2021, so this is no joke. At the same time, Instead of sanctioning Russia like everybody else, New Delhi struck a deal with Moscow for 3 million barrels of crude. Now, the amount is irrelevant because India consumes more than that in a single day. But the fact that India traded with Russia, continued to maintain ties with Russia, bought this oil at a discount and in rupees, rubles, so dealing another blow to the US dollar. So China refuses to sanction Russia. India and Pakistan refuse to sanction Russia. They're continuing to buy gas and oil like normal, right? Despite the threats to India that it will also face sanctions. That doesn't sound very isolating, right? That's roughly 40% of the world's population there, refusing to toe the Western narrative, refusing to toe the Western line, I should say. And never mind all the other countries that have also refused to condemn Russia. Just look at this map of who has sanctioned Russia. It's basically EU member states, North America, and Japan, and Australia. So in other words, it's the global north, right? This is where all the world's wealth is hoarded. And, you know, all the countries that have not sanctioned Russia are mostly countries you would consider the global south, right? So there's an interesting pattern right there. Western governments and media, they keep saying the international community is united against Russia. I'm sorry, that's not what it looks like. The West is not the international community. It's the West, or the global north, if you want to use the new terms, right? So as a matter of fact, it goes further than that. Let's look at these two UN votes. On March 2nd, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution condemning Russia. The overwhelming majority of countries did vote to condemn Russia. That's undeniable. But if you look at who abstained, we have Iran, Iraq, China, India, Pakistan, South Africa. Again, that is enormous. That's well over a third of the world's population, you know, above 40%. We're nearing half the world's population. And so later on March 24th, another General Assembly resolution and pretty much the same result. And 2 days before that, on March 22nd, you had a meeting in Moscow between the Russian foreign minister and who? The ambassadors of all the emerging economic powers, the BRICS, right? So you've got the ambassadors of Brazil, India, China, South Africa, meeting in Moscow with Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister. Again, that doesn't really look very isolating to me, does it? So you've got the two most populous countries on Earth, two nuclear powers, meeting in Russia's capital with Lavrov. I bet you didn't hear about that on the BBC. Now, Lavrov actually made his first visit to China since the war began. Just a week later, on March 30th, Lavrov actually visited India on April 1st. And now, India has received many visits, many official visits in the past week. You've had officials from the UK, from Greece, Austria, Mexico. They've all come to India. But the only one that India's Prime Minister Modi met with was Lavrov. And again, that pretty much tells you everything you need to know. But this war in Ukraine hasn't been without its setbacks, right? When we talk about a global realignment, that goes both ways. And so we've seen the European Union openly arming Ukraine. That's unprecedented. Germany, the same thing, right? Germany has broken with its past, with its stated stance of neutrality. And Germany's going even further. It's rearming. And I think this is something that not a lot of people really grasp. They don't understand how serious this is that Germany is rearming. That never ends up well. The last time Germany rearmed, we had a Second World War, we had the Holocaust, we had 30 million dead in Europe alone. And now Germany is basically doing what Donald Trump wanted it to do, what NATO wanted it to do, which is increase their defense spending from 1.5 to 2% of their GDP. So Germany's announced 100 billion euros for its military. That's more than Russia. This is incredible, and it could have very, very severe repercussions down the road. Now, as soon as the war started, Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan went to Moscow. He not only met with Putin, he also bought 2 million tons of gas and wheat. He refused to condemn Russia at the UN. He refused to sanction Putin. And the Americans took offense to that, right? Because they want countries they can control. And so soon thereafter, Imran Khan unveiled a plot by the United States to oust him, to unseat him from power. Lo and behold, here we are. And Imran Khan has just been ousted via a vote of no confidence. And like all Pakistani prime ministers before him, he didn't get to complete his 5-year term. The Americans are like the mafia. They don't forget. And they punished Imran Khan for daring to conduct an independent foreign policy. And that's the grim reality, right? That shifting towards a multipolar world doesn't come without a price, and the American empire will kick and scream and take down as many with it as it can. To punish Russia, we've seen many corporations pulling out, from McDonald's to Instagram, you name it. And among those are credit card giants Visa and MasterCard, which is actually not that smart when you think about it, because what they've basically done is they handed their market share in Russia to China, right? Because as soon as they left, China's UnionPay came into Russia and linked up with Russia's payment system, Mir, M-I-R. And to make things even more interesting, while all this was happening, Iran and Venezuela started talks to link their payment systems to Russia's Mir. So, you know, further enlarging the cooperation, the international cooperation between these countries, further enhancing the economic ties between the axis of resistance, between the global south. So the West attempts to crush Russia's financial system, you know, by freezing roughly half of the Russian central bank's foreign assets. They haven't entirely succeeded, because as a matter of fact, if you look right now at the value of the Russian ruble, it's regained a lot of its value. It's almost back to pre-war levels at 80 rubles to the dollar. And of course, there are people who say, well, this is just artificial, it's just temporary. Yeah, but it's still astounding. You know, Russian President Vladimir Putin told the Russian Central Bank, and he told Gazprom, the state-owned gas company, to come up with a plan by March 31st to make sure that all gas payments from unfriendly countries be conducted in rubles, not euros or dollars. And again, this is a monumental shift, because as we were saying, most oil and energy transactions are denominated in US dollars. Actually, most of Russia's gas sales to Europe are in euros. And so when Putin says unfriendly countries, he's talking mostly about the EU, the US, Japan, Norway, the countries that sanctioned Russia. And that alone helped shore up the value of the ruble, as European countries, which again, collectively, they get 40% of their gas from Russia. So, you know, they have no choice. They have to go now to Gazprom Bank and open an account in rubles, where their euros will be taken. They'll be sold for rubles in their name at the Moscow Stock Exchange, and then pay for the gas, then also used to pay for the gas in their name. So not only does that drive up the demand for rubles, but it's also smart because it means European buyers are now opening accounts at a Russian bank and not the other way around. So this further insulates both the money itself by keeping it in Russia and Gazprom Bank from potential sanctions in the future. And Joe Biden, the US president, he made clear that there will be food shortages as a result of the conflict. Benchmark gas prices have gone through the roof. People in the U.S. are paying $4 a gallon now. And yes, there was already an energy and fuel crisis before the war. But the Americans and the Europeans have essentially taken a bad situation and made it three times worse. Don't go anywhere. We'll continue breaking down the shift to a multipolar world right after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
So as we were looking at the other week in Yemen, when the price of fuel goes up, everything goes up, because fuel is one of the most important commodities and affects everything from healthcare to public transport to groceries. Now, earlier I spoke to Scott Ritter about his take on things. Scott is a former intelligence officer in the US Marine Corps. He also served as a United Nations weapons inspector and offers formidable insight, not just in combat-related matters, but international affairs and what it means exactly, you know, transitioning to a multipolar world.
The war in Ukraine is a cleansing moment, and that I don't mean that in a good way. You know, it's like let's say you have a forest that's full of trees that are infected with fungus and insects and all that. And then you have a forest fire come through and burn it all down. That's not necessarily a good thing, except that what emerges in the aftermath of that fire is a viable forest with healthy trees. that'll grow better and produce, you know, have a better impact on the environment. What existed prior was just a festering cesspool of, you know, of infection. The world today is a festering cesspool of infection because of the United States, because of our efforts to impose unilateral hegemony over the world. Ukraine, you know, you can't make the transition from that to what Russia and China are seeking to do without a forest fire. And Ukraine is that forest fire. And it's sad for the Ukrainian people. It's sad for the world. But I think that, for instance, Russia's economic addiction to the West is being broken because of this. The impetus necessary to get Russia to make the strategic pivot away from the West to China and Eurasia is only happening because of this. The liberation of the Russian government from the economic infection of Western influence and the role played by the oligarchs. This is a cleansing moment. There is going to be a radical realignment of centers of gravity in the world. The singular polarity that exists is being broken apart, and it's going to be spread out. And BRICS is probably the initial model of where these centers of gravity are going to, the new centers of gravity are going to emerge.
So, you know, the Russians have demanded that quote-unquote unfriendly countries start paying for gas in rubles, right? So Hungary, they've just announced that they will follow, they will comply, and they're effectively breaking ranks with the EU in saying that. Do you think there's going to be a domino effect? Do you think that other countries will follow suit?
Absolutely. They have no choice. Austria. How does Austria think it's going to get its gas? Austria is going to be paying in rubles. The Vatican is going to be paying in rubles. Slovakia is going to be paying in rubles. And Germany is going to be paying rubles. They claim they're not going to be, but when the economic reality of what's about to happen to Germany hits home, and I would be willing to put money on the fact that Scholz won't survive the year.
Well, how long do you think that people in the West will tolerate these conditions? You know, higher gas prices, higher food prices. You know, just for the sake of what's being sold in the media as, oh, we're projecting European values and Western values. I mean, how long do you think this is going to go on for? Do you think, you know, there will come a breaking point, or do you think the media are so good at propagandizing people that everyone's just going to tolerate it?
You know, the media works when people come home and they have heat, they have food, and they have comfort. The media doesn't work when you come home and you're cold and you're hungry and you're uncomfortable. There's no amount of propaganda that can change those realities. And the, you know, how long is this going to last until the next election? It's over. There's not a single democracy that will have its current government survive the next election if this policy stays in place and the economies of that country tank. No government will survive a tanking economy. None. Now, in the United States, we don't have a parliamentarian system. So it's pretty much accepted right now that the Congress, that we have a midterm election coming up in November, and that the Republicans are going to gain control of Congress because the Democrats can't spin this. No matter how much Americans claim they support the Ukrainians, at the end of the day, high gas prices, high food prices are going to basically dictate that the government in power has failed.
So Russia have pegged the ruble to gold. What do you make of that?
Russia has done something very clever. I mean, how many people before this crisis thought that that Putin would link the ruble to the gold standard? But it happened, and it was a genius move, because now the ruble, believe it or not, is dictating it, because the price of gold used to be linked to the dollar. I mean, you know, it's all based upon the dollar. But now, by saying that I think it's 5,000 rubles are worth a half a gram of gold or something like that, that value doesn't change. At the end of the day, 5,000 rubles are worth this much gold. And so now it's the dollar that is linked to the ruble, and he's flipped the script. And again, this isn't a temporary measure designed to, if there hadn't been the divorce of the economies, then I would say there's a chance that this is just games. But there's been the divorce of the economy, so there's literally no impetus, no reason for Russia to play temporary games, because they're not going back to the dollar. They're not going back to the euro. They're not going back to the way things were. They're starting anew. This is about empowering the ruble to function in a trans-Eurasian market, not in an American market, not in a European market, but in a trans-Eurasian market as part and parcel of a currency flux that includes the yuan, the rupee, and other currencies as co-equal currencies of joint, you know, that can be jointly traded. No, Russia, this is the new reality.
You know, let's be clear. This isn't like sanctioning Syria or Iran or Venezuela. The U.S. and the EU, they're so used to bullying smaller countries with zero consequences. But this time, the sanctions go both ways. You know, these bureaucrats in Brussels, they're ready to hurt their own people just to spite Russia. But of course, it's okay for them because they're not the ones who are going to lose their jobs or feel the bite of higher gas prices and food prices. Russia isn't an economic giant like the United States, but it does play a strategic role, and it supplies a good chunk of Europe's gas. You can't just go, yeah, we're going to punish the Russians and forget about it. The ripple effect is going to be enormous. And the West have really shot themselves in the foot, right? Sure, they think they're punishing Russia in the short term, but in the long term, they've helped to speed up the process of de-dollarization and the emergence of a stronger Asia. You know, the West are basically begging Russia and China to find alternatives to SWIFT, to conduct oil and gas sales in denominations other than the US dollar, so either in rupees, rubles, or renminbi. Just to give you another example, on April 8th, China began buying coal and oil from Russia in renminbi. Again, the West are pushing Russia into China's arms and encouraging the global south to break free of the Western financial and monetary system, and proving just how important China's Belt and Road Initiative and greater Eurasia will be in the future. It's astonishing how the war in Ukraine has led to so many changes on a global scale and sped up the transition to a multipolar world, undermining US hegemony in the process. Now again, no one is saying at the flick of a switch, we're gonna wake up tomorrow and find a multipolar world, but things certainly appear to be shifting in that direction at a faster pace than ever before. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
Reflection on Imam Hassan's dynamic personality. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, Salam, dear listeners, and heartiest congratulations to you all on a very blessed day. Today is the 15th of the fasting month of Ramadan, a day on which the All-Merciful Lord granted an excellent grandson to his last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The newborn was such an excellent baby and was destined to grow up into an excellent man that the Prophet, on the commandment of God, brought to him by the Archangel Gabriel, gave his grandson the name Hassan, which in Arabic means the most excellent. The proud parents of the radiant baby were the Prophet's immaculate daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, and her infallible husband, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon them. Please stay with us for a special feature on this auspicious occasion, but first listen to an excellent aphorism from Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him, which is certainly food for thought. Think, because thinking is the life of the heart of a man who sees, and is the key to doors of wisdom. The Arabic word tafakkur and its derivatives, which mean thinking, pondering, contemplation, and reflecting, has been emphasized by the Almighty in several ayahs of the Noble Quran in order to firm up our faith, enable us to realize the realities of creation, help us sift truth from falsehood, open our minds to discover the bezels of wisdom, and enlighten our hearts to find the facts of salvation. Imam Hassan Mojtaba, peace upon him, along with the 11 other infallible heirs of the Prophet, is often referred to as Qur'an al-Natiq, or the speaking Qur'an. This is further proof of God's infinite mercy in making the progeny of the Prophet, hailed in the Noble Qur'an as mercy unto the creation, as the gateway of salvation for mankind. The auspicious 15th of the fasting month of Ramadan, the birthday of this blessed figure in Medina in 3 AH, provides us an opportunity to dwell on his unrivaled excellence. At his birth, the Prophet of Islam became grandfather for the first time, and by the command of God Almighty, named him Hassan, which, as we said earlier, means the most excellent. What an excellent imam he proved to be is borne out from his wise move in unmasking hypocrisy through a masterstroke of a peace treaty with Muawiyah, the most sinister hypocrites of his time, who was masquerading as a Muslim in order to deceive Muslims so as to subject the Ummah to the un-Islamic rule of the godless Umayyads.